And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 to Noon Show on this Friday, the 19th of September, 2025. And you're very welcome along, of course, and you're very welcome to get involved in the conversation. With it being Friday, we have a Friday panel, which I'll introduce to you very shortly. We're going to be talking about some of the big topics making the news and conversations this week. 07491 25000. If you want to call in during the hour and leave a comment, please do. WhatsApps or texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or you can email comments at highlandradio.com. and just to invite you to watch the show if you wish. If you're at home, you can use your Fire Stick, your smart TV, and watch us on the YouTube app Highland Radio Ireland, and we're across Facebook as well. And we're also already joined by Gilbert and Philemy and hundreds of others watching on the various platforms across the world. Okay, let's say good morning to Maria Rush, manager at Rush Fitness and PRO of Donegal Women in Business Network. Congratulations, by the way, on the latter appointment there, Maria. I don't think I've spoken to you since.
No, thank you very much, and good morning to everybody listening, and good morning to my fellow panelists. How are you? Yeah, thanks a million, Greg. Huge honour.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see how we get on.
Eimear McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mart. Good morning, Eimear.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to everyone else.
Great to have you with us. And Councillor Micheál Colum McGillan Asperg, independent councillor in the Glenties Municipal District. Good morning, Micheál Colum.
Margin White, that Greg, I guess Margin White and Birch Bonnet and Shaw Foster.
It's very good to have you all with us. Right, okay. In the wake of the Daniel Arubo's tragic death, echoing the unresolved case of Kyron Dernan, does Tulsa's pattern of inadequate follow-up, as some have described it, on vulnerable children signal a systemic failure that demands urgent reform to prevent future losses? Since that story broke, Tulsa has revised the number of children whose cases were closed during the COVID-19 pandemic and are subject to a well-being check to cover 42,000 people. And the agency confirmed that the provisional number of children encompassed by checks is 42,552. That's an awful lot of catching up that we have to do because we weren't doing it to begin with. Eimear McGuinness, we can't allow this to happen again.
No, it's actually sickening to watch, and it just keeps happening. The system is, you know, and then you hear the head of Tulsa was out and they all had something to say. Now, we didn't actually, and we won't get to see the report because they're open cases, but like when you read the case of both little boys that have gone missing recently, like to think that they were known to Tulsa and they're only little boys now, you know, that nobody went back and actually checked on their welfare. You know, that should be done every 6 months. I just can't understand how, because there's no referral, that they're just, you forget about them and move on to your next case. Maybe it's inadequate staff, and I don't know, but I just think it's horrific in this day and age that that can happen. And another thing as regards to fostering and that, because I had looked at fostering myself, you know, there's a reason these children are put into foster care in the first place. And we went a good step down the road of the fostering care issue. And one thing I learned from it is you have to be willing to, if you get a child into your care, that your weekends or whatever, you have to take that child to go back to see the family. They always want to return the child to the original family, which that's okay. And I understand that. But why was the child taken out of the family system in the first place? And I think that's something that really needs looking at, because I don't know. I just think it's horrific to think that you just close a case on a child and you don't check or follow up on them 6 months, a year.
Yeah, Maria Rush, it's, you know, it's all children really, because, you know, obviously we're focusing on the children that came to the attention of Tulsa, but there doesn't seem to be really any satisfactory way of, you know, tracking the welfare of children, generally speaking. But when we do have a heads up that there could be issues, yeah, it's like you sign off and say, right, well, that's okay, and there's no follow-up. And then children can disappear off the face of the planet for years. And In these two cases, from what I can gather, we happened to discover that they hadn't been seen for years.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Eimear. I find this whole case incredibly upsetting. I suppose whether you're a parent or not, it's upsetting. You know, when even yesterday in the shop, seeing his wee face looking out at us from the papers, it was just, it beggars belief that a child can be so easily missed. And unfortunately, these are two high profile cases, but you have to wonder how many more there are. I think I agree with everything Eimear said. I think systematic failures is the main cause here of not being able to keep a track. And I do think it's very important that we say that, you know, it's fair to remember that the frontline social workers, the frontline people on these jobs, they're under massive strain. And I'm not saying this in any way to make excuses, but I know from having worked in education that there's a huge amount of strain on resources, there's a huge amount of strain on time. The pandemic and the closure of schools, for example, at the time, added its own issues then, because there weren't those agencies weren't all speaking together for so long. So with homeschooling, with closures, with loss of staff, with the lack of morale and the drop of morale in those jobs as well, there's so many things happening, but none of those are an excuse for what's happened to these children.
See, in terms of, say, for instance, you know, water provision or roads infrastructure, and you can talk about resources, staff resources, financial resources, oversight management, that's one thing. But these are thousands of children, enough children to fill a big football stadium. Like, is this going to be another crisis? Now, listen, a head and a stick doesn't achieve anything, but ultimately someone needs to be found responsible for this, because until we get surely some level of responsibility in these areas, we're going to just see this happen over and over again until such time as it's stumbled upon. Why does a TD or member of government never come forward and say, we thought unearth this scandal? This, you know, why is it always an investigates program or an expose or a happen chance? I mean, there's serious failures there. And as I say, in terms of water, roads and all that kind of stuff, right, okay, we can argue the toss. But this is the welfare of tens of thousands of children. Micheál Colum?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I listened to Eimear and Maria there and what they were saying there. And I think, as any decent human being, we're all moved in relation to this case and the last case. And the idea that the state is so unorganised in terms of child welfare. And I think Maria's right in what she's saying in terms of not making any excuses for anybody. But there are people out there who are social workers who are doing fantastic work. There are other community groups out there who work alongside TUSLA who are very family and child focused, the likes of Lifes, who do fantastic work around the county, and many other groups as well who are absolutely rattled in relation to this. But they also have stories that they can tell. I know myself, when I worked with the HSE, which is a good number of years now, I was a family support worker. And even within my youth work, when I worked with the in youth work, like, we would have worked very, very closely hand in hand with TUSLA. And when I left the HSE at the time as a family support worker, I think that in the area that I worked, without identifying it, there was something like 140 families that needed high-level support and emergency support that we knew they weren't going to get. So I do think there has to be a review. I do think there has to be a serious sit-down. And you mentioned politicians there. Why is it that state broadcasters or other journalists are the ones who are exposing this? I think that there are, Greg, with respect, there are loads of people out there who have been shouting for a very long time in relation to the inadequacies within the service. But we need to sit down and we need to be able to work together and not finger pointing and our...
Okay. Well, with respect, I just want to come back on that. I think I personally would be perfectly happy to point the finger at everyone who has any responsibility or any influence over 42,500 children being signed off by Tuzla and never checked up on again.
100%. And what I was trying to get to was there that we wouldn't be sitting down and finger pointing, as politicians tend to do, at each other, at what political party are to blame. We're talking about children, we're talking about their carers, and we're talking about their parents, other human beings. And the idea that we are losing within the system, which we know happens constantly, people fall within the stools constantly, not just in terms of the cases like this here, but many, many others, many other families and children and individuals, and especially women, have been failed consistently by state. And we need to get that together. And if we look at the reports every year from Barnardo's, and we look at the poverty within families, poverty within a certain age group of 1 in 5 children going to school hungry, and we've put all that together, it states very clearly as a headline, we are failing children dramatically.
Well, what do we do about it? Just to put those figures again into context, 225,000 children in this country living in poverty, 5,000 children are homeless, 42,500 were under, at some point, the care or at least the interest of Tuzla, and they actually don't know what the story with them is. Our only hope is that it's only, which is a horrific thing to for even come out of my mouth, 2 wee boys, but we don't know. What does that say about, is it us as a society? Is it governance, Maria? What does it say? That's a lot of people. Let me just reiterate, 225,000 kids living in poverty, 5,000 homeless, and 42,500, at one point at least, vulnerable children that we don't know where they are.
I mean, those numbers are staggering considering our population, Greg. It is, and yes, we are, I agree with everything Neil Collin just said, we are failing our children hugely. There was a piece in the Independent yesterday by Lorraine Courtney, and she actually, just what you just said, Greg, she talks about how, as a society, why are we so keen to just put our heads down and walk on? And a lot of it, she reckons, comes from the idea that, you know, we're no longer, we don't know our neighbours anymore. And there's a lot of social issues there. That we don't know our neighbours, that we don't gather on a Sunday maybe as much as we used to. Things like that.
Can I just point to that? And I don't wish to be ignorant. I think, you know, even when everyone lived in each other's doors, there was, you know, massive cover-ups of child abuse,
huge
domestic violence.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's an excuse, but...
I don't think it's the glory years, if you know what I mean. And I'm not saying it's your words. I know you're quoting somebody else.
She talked as well about the socioeconomic background of the children that tend to go missing, and how, you know, is a child's worth based on their income? And I mean, when you look at those numbers that you just called there, Greg, about, you know, 5,000 children homeless, we have 225,000 living in the poverty line. Like, there's so much wrong. And I mean, we could sit here till the cows come home trying to come up with ways that it can be sorted. But until we have systems in place and procedures in place and management of those systems in place, we really are.
The reason I think it's important to talk about, though, is because we actually are, we have more power than maybe we take credit for. So if enough people are pissed off about this, listening to this show, maybe they bring it up with the TDs, maybe it becomes an election issue, maybe it becomes a red line. So the talk, I think, is, you know, really significant. Not that you're saying otherwise, Maria, by the way. I hope you don't think I'm contradicting you.
Not at all. Micheál
Collum, just, you wanted to come in there before I get last word from Emer on this.
And I think this is really, really important, that if you look at the poverty levels within the Free State, but we also need to look at in relation to the 6 counties as well, because we are a very small island. And as just Maria says, if we look at our population, which is 6.5 million, and if you look at the poverty levels, and if you look at the homeless figures right across, and look at the social and economic backgrounds of the people that we're talking about, the human beings that we're talking about, those that are homeless living in hotels, no, irrelevant of their cultural or nationality, other human beings who are barely scraping by, and a political decision has been made by the economic elite who they look after. Nobody will be going to school hungry for the want of a better word, from Dublin
but,
Four.
But of course, nobody. We, yeah, but nobody my point is we can't stand. Of course, they won't.
Nobody in a hotel will be living. Nobody in Dublin Four will be living in a hotel with no prospects of getting a long term.
Of course, Micheál Colum. But the point is we can't just stand by and watch on and sort of say this is how these people. This is why. The public need to be more motivated by this. Do you know what I mean? You're sitting there in a pro-Palestinian T-shirt, okay, and you're campaigning, actively campaigning for what's going on over there, which is fantastic, right? But it would be no good if you just sat there recognizing that it happens and blaming Israel, right? You'd need to get involved and make your voice heard. And that's what we need to do in this country as well for this 250,000 children.
Yeah, I fully agree with you.
You know, rather than just saying, well, it's the elite and we're the victims here. Well, let's motivate.
Clarify here that I have committed, you know, because you've kind of, as an individual.
I haven't. I genuinely haven't.
Okay then. So all I can say is that for myself, who my own background, who did make a decision in terms of where I want to put my time, energy, and focus was to work with families, work with young ones, and to politically challenge at the same time, because we have abilities to do a number of things at the same time. And on that basis, in terms of youth poverty, of homelessness, stuff that I've been very proactive at for many, 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 many years, longer than I haven't. And I think it's really important that we put it into the perspective that it is in and look at the social and economics of it and look at it politically. Look at it politically, no more different than 70 years ago, when we used to send our children out to the lagging and the social and economics and the political decisions that were made to allow us to sell our children off to wealthy farmers for a period of the season.
And until very recently, we were selling our children off out of mother and baby's homes as well. It's not necessarily historic. I take your point, and I wasn't having a go at you, but I appreciate you clarifying what you'd be at. Last word to you on this.
Oh, look, we kind of got carried away and went on a different tangent there. I would agree with you, Greg. Like, only people can change this.
I think we
started off talking about two children that we know of that have disappeared, and what will be done about it. Oh, yeah, we're all in shock, and it'll be on the front of the newspapers today. But what's going to actually happen? Tuslet failed dramatically here. They really backed up. And they didn't follow up. If they need to employ more people, our young people who cannot defend themselves are the most important people in society. And we have failed. Norma Foley, come on, talking about, oh, it's awful and it's everything else. But she's the lady in the power that should be overseeing this. And we're talking about it now and it's happened.
Again,
like, it's disgraceful. And what is going to happen? They have failed dramatically. They might be understaffed. I am not. And they do work very hard, the people that are there.
But if I would want to see a letter from Tuzla to someone in government stating that we can't do our job, we need to follow up on these kids and we need this funding. And I want to see the response from whomever is in that department saying, we appreciate what you're saying, but there's no further funding available. A person just lost the second biggest job in Britain at the moment because she misclaimed some sort of a rental value of a property or something. And we're talking about 250,000 kids here. So let's follow a train of documents to find out who said, right, Tuzla has enough funding. You know, that's the kind of accountability I'm looking for.
Yeah, there's no accountability, Greg. And I think we've had this conversation many times before. Like, there are basic, simple systems that would help the people who are on the front line do their job. An information communication system. Why can't the education, schools, welfare, medical, TUSLA, cross-border, why can't they have a database where they can check on a child? Instead of this individual, where we all have our own systems and we're not allowed to share information, you know, you have to be very careful, of course, but how is it that you were going in swings and roundabouts to try and get information on a child? The person who discovered this with, ironically enough, over money, let's be honest, we're back to that again. The person who discovered it, I would love to know how long it took them to actually find out. Like, how long did it take from that first moment of, God, there's something not right here, that form doesn't work, to actually being able to acknowledge this child is missing? As a mother, I have to fill out a form Exactly. And I have to fill out a form. I'm sure any other parent here has to do the same every year to say that my children, where they're in school and that they're still here and that that's, you know, and that if I don't fill that out, I don't get the next payment. That kind of administration's quick enough. Mm-hmm. There's no bother cutting off the money that has to happen, you know. Sorry, Colm, or Mio.
No, no, to the guard. No, I do think that in relation to, and look at notice, but I don't know either of both of yous, and I'm not sure of the background of both of yous, but if, and no doubt yous know well people who work daily with children and family out there. And one of the concerns, and I remember back then when I worked, where you would have concerns. And maybe some community groups who do fantastic work out there, and they do fantastic works, like I said, the likes of Lives and many other groups out there. But the concerns are, if you rock a boat too much, that means you don't get maybe possibly the funding that you badly need to work. We had fantastic projects. I remember we had a fantastic project where we were doing night work many, many years ago. Maybe, I don't know, maybe about 12, 13 years ago. And our job was to engage young ones on the streets late at night and try to encourage them to look at different avenues in life and that there, because that's the time that they were out and about. Pilot project, fantastic project. We felt at the time it was very, very worthwhile. And again, cut. And like other projects that are fantastic out there are doing youth engagement, family engagement, individual engagement.
Yep, that's maybe great. The stuff that's going great is great, and I'm not cutting across it because we need to move on. It's the stuff that's failing at the moment. There are brilliant people doing brilliant things, not least foster parents. But one thing, just Marie, I want to clarify, because of the nature of the subject, I would imagine that point that lady you were quoting was actually making, and I suspect I picked it up wrong. She probably was saying that we knew each other, and if a kid went missing in the neighbourhood house, you would know it and be able to report it. So I probably cut across you a little bit there. I presume that's the point.
Yeah, not at all. She wasn't in any way putting blame on anybody. I just thought it was a really nice article, and it was talking about a child's visibility and how basically we need to do better. And it's not just, TUSA have failed, but we as a society 100%
And I picked that wrong, and I apologise, because as I was obviously listening and thinking, I was proving actually that's probably what she meant, and that's a very valid point. Okay, back with more from our guests in a moment. Keep your texts and WhatsApp coming into us, because we're very keen to hear your opinions as well. We're joined by Emer McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mart, Councillor Micheál Colm McGowan-Asbaigh, independent councillor in the Glenties Municipal District, and Maria Rush, who's the manager of Rush Fitness and now the PRO too of the Donegal Women in Business Network. With the recent assassination of US conservative activist Charlie Kirk amid deepening political divisions in America and a surge in online threats and intimidation against Irish politicians like the tarnisher Simon Harris, is Ireland approaching a tipping point where verbal abuse escalates into lethal violence? Micheál Colm, you're the elected rep on the call. I'll go to you first.
Yeah, in terms of verbal abuse and violence towards public representatives, yeah, we see a massive increase in this, especially and very much directed at those who are, not all, obviously, who are of a progressive ideological position. There is a huge concern out there in terms of the aggression and the violence and the threats. We would talk about this quite a lot on a regular basis, myself and a handful of other progressive politicians, and we do, yes, very much have a concern. I do know that the guards are conscious of it. I think that things are changing, and I think within the political world this last number of years, that things have changed in the last very, very short number of years. Things have changed quite dramatically. I think it's very concerning and worrying after the prime time last night had shown that RTE were able to buy the data, and that RTE then were able to break down who the individuals were, right down to identify where their homes were, what they do on a regular pattern. And that is concerning. And I would hope that the state would move immediately to stop anybody buying anybody's data, which is through the phone, right through to the Defence Forces, the Navy, and the Garda Síochána, and very specifically politicians as well. And that is concerning. There is no doubt whatsoever. There is threats out there. The guards will not talk about this on radio, about any individual cases. There's threats right across the 30 or the 26 counties at least, and possibly within the occupied six counties, but also within our own county, that there are threats, and these threats need to be taken very, very, very serious. There is quite a lot of talk that the far right are now military training right across different parts of the country. There is belief, strong belief, with intelligence to back it, that there is explosive training and that there are weapon and sniping training taking place. And this leaves us in a place where we haven't been for a very long time, and probably never been, in terms of threats towards politicians from the far right.
Okay, and I'll taste that with you a little bit more. I want to bring Eamon McGuinness in here now. I do get the sense that it feels like it's only a matter of time, Eamon, before we do see, a politician or someone, very profile, with a high profile in a particular movement, coming to harm.
Lucas, I'm all for freedom of speech, and I do believe we should be able to debate about things and people should be able to have a different opinion on things. And I suppose then you'll have, and for want of a better word, you'll call them some nutter who takes it that step farther. I do also, I've looked at it from both sides, and, it must be very hard for a parent maybe of a child that's sick to sit there and listen to a politician talk about something and defend something that has really hurt or damaged them in some way, and basically make it or try to make it right. And I can understand where the anger rises, children with scoliosis and all them different things. I can understand where that anger, and you'd want to kill them or something. Mm. But at the end of the day, you know that that's wrong and that's not going to fix the problem, or you should know that that's wrong. What's happening with Simon Harris, I think, is appalling. It's awful. I was watching actually a clip this morning of Martin Hayden. He was at the Ploughing yesterday, and somebody came up behind him with regards to, we're chatting about Gaza and the abuse he took. He was just walking along then, and he said he had sat listening to him for an hour speaking, and what he hadn't said or what he hadn't done, and the whole camera has followed him. I don't know if you've seen it. And he abused him. Where was he getting with that? Mm. Why did he think that Martin Hayden was going to stop at any stage?
But we're at a point now whereby there's collateral damage. Everything is justifiable from the left and the right, by the way. I should point out,
it's people seem to think, and I don't know if that's they're struggling so much or what has made people like that. America seems to be going to another level, and as regards politicians out there, the more radical you are and the more outrageous you are and the more things you say, the more media attention you get.
But we are tracking that. That's the reason why I've brought it back up for conversation today. Yeah. Where America is at this position one, Britain would be, say, position three, and we're at position five, but we're all moving in the same direction.
We
see where the inevitability of where it's going. Maria Rush, there was a time whereby people could have two different political points of view and thrash that out and get angry and even square up, right? But at the end of the day, you didn't judge the person as their view or what have you. You could still maybe talk about other things with them. Those days seem to be gone now in the extremes of politics.
Those days are gone in the extremes of politics, and I think they're gone in the media as well. I think in the general population, we're still able to have conversations where I can disagree with you completely about a topic, but I can still like you as a person. And I can still acknowledge that, okay, I might not agree with what you're saying at all, but empathy allows me to maybe understand where you're coming from, because we all have different perspectives. And Greg, I don't know how many times over the years we have been talking about this on here, and I will always say, the truth is, your opinion is not fact. And the line, everyone is entitled to my opinion, and that's not me speaking, by the way, it's a quote, generally seems to be a case now that if I think something, and for example, Emer, you think something different, we can't speak, we can't be friends. And in order, rather now than debating and having conversation, we attack each other.
But just in relation to that, Maria, and I'd love to hear your point, and this is not specific to you, and I have no access to your social media or what have you, but it would not be the case if I did a dive into your ex algorithm and your Facebook page that, and maybe it's not the case, that you're more likely to be interacting or associating with people that are have similar views to you.
Absolutely. And the algorithm will always, if you look something up, like I'm at the stage now where my kids are looking up things and then it's showing it to me, you know, so this is, it's, and I don't want to know about anime and, you know, things like that. But yes, and we do fall into kind of echo chambers 100%. I taught English for a long time and I used to teach debating skills. And one of the things I used to say to the kids was, if you get to a point where you have to start firing insults and attacking the other person, you've lost your argument straight away. You should be able to disagree in a sense about anything. Well, where you can give your opinion, you can give where you're coming from. And sometimes through conversations with people, you're able to think, hang on, maybe it's not as black and white as I thought it was. This is where we are now within the media. Anybody, I could go tomorrow and find evidence, guys, that the grass is actually purple and that we're all wrong about it being green. If I wanted to find evidence to back that up, I could. Because we can find, based on those echo chambers, based on what we're looking at, based on misinformation, we can find any evidence we want to back up anything at all. Mm. So when it comes to politics, you know, we have got the far right and the far left. Do you know what? If you go far enough right, you'll end up back at the left. And if you go far enough left, you're going to go around in circles.
No, I can't agree with that.
No, but I mean, from the point of view of conversation,
it's like a horseshoe,
I mean,
really.
Around in circles. Yeah,
like
Micheál
Colum,
you know,
obviously,
ridiculous.
I can understand where you're coming from and directing your comments towards the far right. But if you take a step back and look at how the far left are looking to shut people up, the kind of language and rhetoric that they use against their opponents, you know, there's no high moral ground here. I mean, ideologically, you might believe there is, but in terms of discourse and behaviour, there isn't.
Well, you know, Greg, it's okay. And you said there about shutting people up. That's what they're trying to, but it's the abuse and it's how they're trying to do it. Mm. Like, we're sitting here talking today, and if somebody wanted to send a text into you, an outrageous, awful text about one of us, that's okay to do that. And I suppose media allows that to happen. Whether you read it out or not is another thing. Mm. But, you know, people seem to have no filter anymore. And
absolutely,
social media allows that. They write and say awful things about other people. And based on maybe us talking for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, maybe not getting our full points across, they might know nothing about you. And that's where media in general, I suppose, has, and it allows it to continue and it allows it to build into something else. Maybe somebody sitting listening at home then will take this in their head and it develops. So, yeah, while media is great in ways at getting your message across, it also allows.
But no one's going to text in a show like this here and say, threaten violence or what
maybe
have you.
Not this
and I'll
show,
tell you why, me. Because their telephone number is at the top, is associated with the comment on X.
Yeah.
They might say it, and they might put a picture of you and doctor it so there's a bullet through your head or something. But, you know, at least there are some sort of checks and balances. But I take your point. Micheál Colum, go on ahead.
Sorry, Greg, go on ahead.
No, you make your point there.
No, I think we've been here before, right? We need to be realistic about this too. It's the rise of extreme. For me anyway, extreme hard right and fascism. And where the concern is, obviously, it's on the rise again. But all we have to do is look in relation to the 6 counties and fascism there through loyalism. All we have to do is open a history book and look at the rise of fascism within Ireland right through to the 30s. And we need to look at where we are today and why we are where we are. And for somebody who comes from a very left Republican position here. I do believe that this is orchestrated and facilitated by the elite and the political classes. When
you're from a section of politics, Micheál Colum, not you. I'm on about sort of the when the time is right, are more than happy to take up. I'm not saying you are, but to take up arms, to plant bombs, etc. You know, that's violence. That has happened in our history. You're talking about
national liberation in relation to the occupation from British imperialism. But we're talking about something slightly different here, Greg. So what we're talking about is that when capitalism, and we've seen it right through the world, is in crisis, it's facilitated then that the working classes would focus on each other, and instead of focusing on the economic elite and their economic policy that is leaving the working class where we are. So while we are divided and while we see each other as the enemy, the capitalist and the neoliberals are able to work away to profit and to gain.
Can I be honest with you? And this is me being completely honest, and this is on me. I don't know what you've just said. I don't know what any neoliberals.
Right. So basically, what I'm saying is,
I have no idea.
Basically,
what I'm saying is
that when the very, very wealthy people in our society and in the world are hemorrhaging money that they believe that they need to claw back and that they need to re-establish themselves, what they decide to do, and this is textbook. Politics for them is that they get the working class to be divided, them and us, and they facilitate, which we see with Elon Musk and many others, very, very wealthy people, to facilitate the rise of fascism. It's those that are coming in the boats. It's those that have a different sexuality to you. It's those that are in a wheelchair, and it's those that are on the dole queues that are is your enemy. And if we can only stop them claiming the dole, or if we can only stop them claiming social homes and houses, well, things would be okay. And what happens is that the very wealthy in society gets organised and gets wealthier.
I still don't understand. Because what I see is very wealthy.
I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll send you some links.
No, I'm all right.
Maybe but it's something my point that is would be worth looking into.
I see on the left very, very wealthy people profiteering. I see on the right very wealthy people.
I don't know anybody on the left that is very, very wealthy.
Really?
No, I don't.
Liberal politics.
And the circles that I run about, I am off the left. I'm a communist. I'm a Republican. I don't know anybody on the left.
So as soon as you accumulate weight, you can't be of the left. I get where you're coming from. All I see is people, right, who are of the same socio-economical background with very different political points of view that are prepared now at this point to take each other's heads off.
Yes.
And what are we doing to try and address that?
Textbook classics for the elite to divide us, okay, the working class.
Maria or Emer, do you understand? And I don't mean it in any way disparaging. I take full ownership of the fact that it's my ignorance that I don't understand necessarily what you're saying about neoliberalism and that type of stuff. But Maria, can you respond to that?
I get what Micheál Colum's saying about turning us against each other. I fully agree with that, and I do think that there's a lot going on that we will never know about.
So do you believe
circles.
It's the right that is doing that? Because I think that's what Micheál Colum was saying.
My argument or my thought would be, it's really hard to say anything here without getting yourself in trouble, isn't it? But I think if we blame one side for absolutely everything, if the far left, for example, thinks something and believes something, and anybody disagrees with them, and then there's a label put upon us straight away or put upon you straight away that if I don't agree with something, oh, well, you're a bigot or you're a racist.
Well, Israel do that. If you don't agree with what they're doing, they will label you anti-Semite. It was a liberal who shot Charlie Kirk, for an example.
And what was Charlie Kirk doing? He was debating. I would not agree with a lot of what that man said, but he was opening conversations and
he was a good debater.
He was a fabulous debater, fantastic debater. And he was speaking. So you've got down, you're down to the idea of what, there's a difference between freedom of expression and freedom of speech. And I think, Eimear, you touched on this a wee while ago. I can express my views. I mean, I'm sitting here now with three very intelligent people. I can disagree with you. I can agree with you. I have no less respect for you when I go off the air than I did when I came on it. And we would probably disagree on many things, and we would probably agree on many things. But when it comes to the point where my freedom of expression is suddenly being labelled as you are against us, so you are wrong, and that's the end of the conversation, we have a problem. And then the freedom of speech, if it becomes that you can say whatever you want, and as you said, Eimear, I can, and I've been on the other side of it, so I'm speaking from experience, I have had anonymous letters, I have had things said about myself and my family, that comes from being in the public eye to a certain extent. It doesn't excuse it. It doesn't excuse it, and I will stand up to it. But where do we draw the line, and how is it that we have gone from having debates and conversations and disagreements? And let's be honest, we live in a country where we have always had a difficult political discourse. No one's prepared to take the
high moral ground, you see. The problem is we are now so divided, there is no reaching across the aisle, so to speak. The positions have been set.
Yeah, and I saw another writer that I'd be friends with from down the country, and she put up a post the last day about how if my argument would always be there's two sides and the truth somewhere in the middle. And her point was very much that if you're in the middle, you don't have an opinion and I'm not listening to you. And I'm so conflicted with that because she's of the type of person that would call anybody who has a platform who isn't calling out about what she thinks is important as a coward. And I've had that as well. I've had, why aren't you using your platform for this? I use social media for fun. I go on to look at pictures of dogs and things like that because I have enough going on in my life. You know,
I get you.
So anyway, I've gone off.
You've made your point, and we'll be back with more from our guests after these. We're in the company of Maria Rush, Eimear McGuinness, Councillor Micheál Colum, McAllen Aspect. Just on that last topic, are we finished on that, or did anyone feel that they didn't get to conclude their points? We're happy enough.
The only thing I would like to say is look, and I think Maria and Eimear has said this very, very clearly. There is no threat to anybody by being respectful and having discussions. Look, I get on a very regular basis threats without shadow of a doubt, but I do try to, and I know ones give out to me about this, but I try to engage them, to break it down, because the working class are not my enemy. The enemy of the working class is clearly the very elite and capitalism, and we should not be divided.
There's some people in the left of politics in this country are incredibly wealthy, even in this county alone. I still don't get that. Maybe you don't believe them to be true left.
Maybe you're mixing up the left and liberalism because they're two very different economic positions. And I do think that it is important that the working class organises and that we're not misled by the very elite to look at other working class and poor people as our enemy.
But you're not poor,
though.
We
need to stop punching.
You're not poor,
though. Am I working class?
I don't know. Are you?
How am I not working class?
I don't know. It's not an accusation. It's a question.
Okay. Yes, I am working class, very working class. And I just think that we need to punch up and not punch down. And we need to find an economic model that suits all of us. And that's why I strongly sit on the left, because my interest is not to look after the interests of the wealthy, but to look after the interests of the
working class. Are you prepared to sit down around a table with people of the right and have a conversation?
I have no problem having conversations with those who are conservative and believe in a more right-wingish economic position. But what I would not and will not ever be interested in sitting down with is fascists.
Right. Jarlath Burns, by the way, has ruled himself out of the running to be the Sinn Féin candidate. It's a bit of a confusing one because Mary Lou McDonald says what was to happen next would be a game changer. So it's not Jarlath. So it's either backing Catherine Connolly or Piers Doherty running. Eimear, just with that bit of news developing there, do you think they'll put Pierce forward, or is there a candidate we've not heard of that they might go for? Well, or does it
I don't
matter,
know
or?
If there's a candidate we haven't heard for, but I do not believe that Piers Doherty is the person. He's too important to politics, to the party, to put into, as I said to you before, Greg, the last month when we were on here, the president is somebody to meet and greet and somebody that we respect, definitely. Somebody that we're proud of. We definitely would be proud of Keir Starmer, don't get me wrong. But I think he's far too important in everyday politics to put into that role. So is why I do not think he should be there.
So what's the game changer, Maria? That's what Mary Lou McDonald said yesterday. How could it be a game?
I haven't a clue. The presidential election, I've been watching kind of from afar when I'm not working. I agree completely with Eimear that Pierce would be the wrong person to put in there, but for the right reasons. I'm not in any way saying he wouldn't be a wonderful president. I think he would be a fantastic president. But I do believe he's much too important for Donegal and for to be in. He needs to be where he is, if not on a different side. I don't know. But I don't know. At this point, I've kind of lost track of who is in. I don't. So
you're not engaged, which do you know? I think in and of itself is a significant answer, is to be honest with you, because I think that's quite reflective of the mood out there today.
The president is a role, and I agree again with Eimear. I think it's an incredibly important role. So when I'm not engaged, it's not because I don't care. It's because I'm not seeing anybody yet that's making me go, yes, that person would be who I'd like to represent us.
Who do you think the game changer or the game changing move from Sinn Féin is, Micheál Colum? Backing Catherine Connolly, hardly. They couldn't frame that as a game changer, could they? No disrespect to Ms. Connolly, obviously.
Well, first thing I would say is that Catherine Connolly is, I'm clearly openly supporting Catherine Connolly. I've been out canvassing. I've been along with Catherine.
I was chatting to her and I was asking her, would she scrutinise legislation or maybe refer it to the Supreme Court? And effectively her answer was no. Is that not just more of the same, whether you're left, middle or right?
For me, the main thing here is because I haven't given any real interest to the presidential elections for the 26 counties before. But for me, I think the key thing here is that that the main topic seems to be neutrality. And speaking to people from maybe a more traditional Fianna Fáil, not so many, but some Fine Gaelers and Shinners, that they are saying clearly, we're voting for Catherine Connolly. We want to send a clear message to the Dublin government that we don't want to see our neutrality taken away. We don't want the triple lock taken away.
But she I asked her directly. I says if you are of the view that the removal of the triple lock goes against the constitution, would you refer that decision to the Supreme Court as you could? As to test it against the constitution as you could as president, she said no.
Right, I haven't heard that interview, but my understanding clearly is by having conversations with Catherine Connolly over many years, I was very lucky enough that she launched my elections in 2019. And for me, the main topic here is, Eimear's right, look, presidential is more an ornamental role, and I'm not being disrespectful to some aspects, but the key thing here and the main topic that I'm hearing at the door, which I'm very surprised and I'm very encouraged by it, that people are saying we are using the presidential election to send a strong message that our women and men are not going to be sent away to wars.
The one thing she has in her gift of meaning would be to say, I don't agree with this. I believe it goes against the constitution and I'm referring this to the Supreme Court to test that. And she declined to say that she would do that. But anyway, that would be
very disappointing. But I do think from her support base that there would be would put her in a place that would absolutely have to push her to that position. Because
Radio.
Sending our working class kids to war in the interest of the very elite is not in
understood,
our interest.
Understood. And you've had plenty of time. Thank you very much for that. Councillor Micheál Colum McGowan-Asbig, thanks for accepting our invite to come on. Have a great weekend. Eimear McGuinness, lovely to have you on as always. Take care of yourself. Maria Rush, manager at Rush Fitness and PRO of the Donegal Women in Business Network. Thanks as always for your contribution. Have a lovely weekend and best wishes to all.